In William Elliott's seminal text, Carolina Sports by Land and Water, the author speaks of facing down the devilfish, quote, his dark outline distinctly marked and separated by the surrounding waters of a starry belt of phosphorus fire, like some monster vampire hovering above our heads and threatening to crush us beneath his wings. Hello, sports expert Bill Wolf.
Hold on, I'm just tightening my starry belt of phosphorus fire.
you should opt for starry suspenders of phosphorus fire. Because I want to talk not of the devil fish or even the devil ray, but the team that Major League Baseball has rebranded, the Rays. This is a team that almost always loses, and yet this year, best in the American League. Why?
Been the best story in the league.
Best story in the league. Why are the devil Rays at this, the halfway point in the baseball season, why are they number one?
I think mainly because they've pitched incredibly well. And that is because, in my view, when you're as bad as Tampa has been since its birth in 1998, you tend to get to draft high in the draft. That is, you're the worst team. You get to go first when they pick the new players. And so Tampa has stockpiled young talent, made a few deals, and they have wound up with really good young pitching. The most famous of them is Scott Kazmir. New York area fans will remember Scott Kazmir. The Devil Rays got him from the Mets, and he's excellent.
Right.
Edwin Jackson was a guy who was going to be a big star for the L.A. Dodgers, fell on some hard times, but he always had tremendous talent. Andy Sonnenstein is having an unbelievable. These young pitchers are having great years, and so as a result of having been terrible for a very, very long time, they have a ton of talent. And most of it, in my view, is pitching.
Right.
So they have really pitched the snot out of the baseball, and that's why they're number one. But by the way, they're not number one anymore because they've now – I mean, I can't stand doing this to you, and I know how it feels.
Huh?
I got to burst your bubble.
Huh?
They've lost seven in a row,
yeah,
and they're suddenly in second place.
I know. That's
yeah,
that's
it happens.
What happens.
I think the Rays have been a great story. Not sure they're going to be a great story in the second half.
It's just that every week we have three or four things to talk about, and the fourth thing is always, hey, what about those Devil Rays?
we never get to it. That's true.
So
it's
I got to put
it's
them
been
up
about
top.
Seven
now.
Weeks, and now the Rays make it up top.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you doing that.
One interesting thing, though, you know, if a team is bad for long enough in other sports, I think those draft picks really have a big impact. But in baseball,
it happens more quickly, no question.
But also in baseball, sometimes they don't. Sometimes the guys draft terribly. There are fewer can't miss prospects in baseball than in other sports. And sometimes the teams, you know, just don't want to sign a big contract. So there are other things other than being terrible for so long that seem to be trending in the Devil Rays, or as they are called now, the Rays direction. And in fact, they seem, tell me what's your assessment, but a lot of those pitchers that you named weren't acquired via the draft, but they traded for them. Scott Kazmir was a fleecing. Matt Garza was a fleecing. So perhaps some
Edwin Jackson was not a Devil Ray product. That is true. You are correct. And they've also made signings that have worked out fortunately for them. But they have been able to make some of the deals with some of their prospects. And in fact, they are said to have an unbelievably rich minor league system now, so that if there is to be a trade for another player, and in my opinion, for Tampa, it will be a hitter, not a pitcher, that they will be able to make that deal because they have such a rich minor league system of young, and they're supposed to be can't miss, young, hot young prospects. So, no, you're right. They've made deals, guys off the scrap heap. Joe Maddon, the manager, I guess is doing a hell of a job. I never know when a manager in any line of work is doing a hell of a job. You know, whenever things are going well, they're doing a hell of a job. When they're not doing well, they're really not doing a very good job.
Or when they have an angry team meeting, throw a chair, and then the team wins five straight, then you could say hell of a job. But
or
barring
when a guy,
that throw a chair moment.
When they fire the manager and the very same players are doing much better after they fire the manager, then the manager is doing a great job. So anyway, it's a mystery. The D-Rays are good. The Rays are really good, but I'm afraid to say they've lost seven in a row in an ugly fashion, and here come Boston and even the dreaded New York Yankees. So I think we've done a good thing here and a very good editorial judgment by you, Pesca, to talk about the Rays today because they can't lose today. There's no game.
Right.
or tomorrow or Wednesday. So they're going to sit right there almost in first place for at least three more days.
This is sure to stop their
losing streak. And then I don't know. And then I just don't know.
Well, okay, so we're talking about pitchers. Do you think some people who've been following baseball say that this year marks a change where pitchers are in the ascendance? Look at a guy like Tim Lincecum. Look at all these teams trying to get CC Sabathia. For so long, it was all about the sluggers and that commercial where they said chicks love the long ball. But do you think we're now entering a more pitcher-heavy era?
Ooh, do I think we're having? No, I don't. I think that offense has slowed down. It has. I mean, there are fewer runs being scored. It's trending softly toward fewer runs. Are pitchers in ascendancy? Tim Lincecum of the San Francisco Giants is unbelievable. He's a freak of nature. He's 6 feet tall and 175 pounds soaking wet and throws the ball 100 miles an hour. I mean, he's a freak of nature, and it's great to watch him. He's certainly in ascendancy.
Well, maybe I could ask you the question this way. I know 3 years ago it was like, hey, you want to watch some baseball players? And I would point to a bunch of hitters. I think these days I would say you want to get excited by baseball. Maybe two or three of the top five guys would be pitchers.
Yeah, and it happens that way, you know. I mean, if you think of baseball between about 1965 and about 1992, the same was true. It was a pitcher's era, and as you know, the late 60s, it was all pitchers until they had to change the rules to help the hitters. It got to be pitching dominated. Then through the small ballparks and the steroids and all that stuff, it became about all about the hitters. And I suppose it could. It's hard for me to know whether or not that trend has the pendulum has shifted back toward pitching to the degree that it has in the past. I agree with you, though. I think the most exciting players I actually think the best thing to watch in baseball is the defense, not the pitching. That is, you want to see the most athletic play, watch the defense. The diving stop, the incredible throw, the running catch, that's all defense. It's not even pitching. But I hear you. I think that's a fair point. I think pitching is getting better. The runs are diminishing, and it is getting more and more important. I mean, the Rays are a great example. The Devil Rays can pitch the snot out of it, can't hit it at all, and they find themselves, a half game out of first place. So it's a fair argument. It's a good point. I have not heard that argument made, but it's a fairly good one.
You know, internally, the Rays will fine you a dollar if you say Devil Rays.
Yeah, well, yeah. No.
Luckily, we don't have to pony up.
Thank God.
So this is today. We speak on one of 2 days in the entire year of 365 days where there are no professional sports. The day before and after the All-Star game, the only 2 days in our sports-saturated culture.
In the sports television business, it's known as hell.
Hell. And isn't this why they – don't they time what do they usually come out with now? I don't know. They come out with crazy reality shows to distract people sometimes.
Yes.
But what are your thoughts on the All-Star game? It's a fine exhibition for fans, yes.
Sure.
But do you think too much hype is given to the All-Star game given that it doesn't count?
Yes. I don't care about the All-Star game. I never have cared about the All-Star game. I think the All-Star game's greatest use is historical. That is, you can say how many times was so and such and such a player an All-Star and try to rate that player versus all the other players. You know, Willie Mays made 24 All-Star teams.
Oh,
that's very impressive. There's an index created by how many times you made the All-Star game. Other than that, I really couldn't care less about the All-Star game. It doesn't count. The best players, the truly best players, don't play the whole game. The managers just cycle all the players in so that everybody gets to play. So you don't see the best players. Interleague play between the American League and the National League has diminished the exotic nature of the All-Star game. I mean, back when we were kids, if I wanted to see Chet Lemon of the Chicago White Sox play, I could see him at the All-Star game, and that was it, because I lived in St. Louis. We didn't have the American League. Now I see the American League all the time. I mean, I'm a National League fan. I see the American League all the time. So there's no sexiness to seeing these guys you never saw before. The game doesn't count. I'm not a big fan of the All-Star game. I don't ever really watch it, to be honest with you.
And for a kid from St. Louis, maybe this question will be right in your wheelhouse. But
to
add to the hype, this All-Star game, Yankee Stadium closing.
Oh.
I mean, is it really closing?
What are we ever going to do without Yankee Stadium? Well, let me just add this to that. And, I say this at the risk of getting, pelted with rocks and garbage as I walk down the street here in New York City. This Yankee Stadium has almost nothing to do with the Yankee Stadium that was constructed in 1923, I think, and was the house that Ruth built. The dimensions are different. Every single seat is different. The aisles are different. Nothing about it is the same. It was rebuilt in 1973. This Yankee Stadium is the most overrated venue in all of sports. The great Yankee Stadium is a generic stadium from the 70s, and yet we, the national public, are forced to listen to how it is the great and hallowed Yankee Stadium. Well, not a lot of great things have happened there. Reggie Jackson happened there. Derek Jeter happened there. A couple of different Yankee dynasties happened there. That's very, very nice. But this is not Fenway Park. It is not Wrigley Field. And it doesn't break my heart that they're building a new Yankee Stadium 15 feet away across the parking lot. So, yeah, it's the final All-Star game at the house that Ruth built. No, it's the final All-Star game at the house that Steinbrenner built. The house that Ruth built went away in 1973. So, to me, the hyping of Yankee Stadium is a shanda and a fraud.
Well, let's talk about from shanda to mitzvah as I welcome on. I hear we might be joined by your wife, Allison Stewart.
She's sitting right here.
Hey, Allison.
I just want to let you know when he says shanda and fraud.
Yeah, shanda and fraud. It's time for Allison Stewart.
He puts his finger in the air.
That's right. I do. I get very emphatic.
I hear there's a we started off talking about Devil Rays. Could we now talk about sharks? Do you have some shark news to report?
Oh, my goodness. You know, we talked to you last week when we were on family vacation on Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah, we were.
And we went to go to the beach, kind of where they filmed the movie Jaws, and I'll let Bill take it over from here.
Well, we were busy getting a bottle of water when we heard a lady, a middle-aged lady with children, say, "There's a shark out there. My kids are going crazy. There's
right.
a shark 70 yards offshore over
there." You're like, a love shark? Shaquille O'Neal?
No, just a shark, you know, with a fin, a dorsal fin. So anyway, it turns out that there had been a shark sighting off of the beach we were at. We were
big news.
It was in, it was on the AP wire. It was on the national news that there was a shark attack. Now, here's what it was really like. It was like nothing. So you couldn't go in the water, even though people were still going in the water. And the people from Massachusetts were having at it in a way that only people from Massachusetts can have at it, which is to say, they were sitting on the beach talking to each other about the shark. "Let me tell you about that shark. It'll bite your face off." I heard those words spoken. "It'll bite your face off. Bite your nose and your eyes. It'll bite your face off." Now, the only thing I've left out of that little accounting of what it's like to have a shark sighted off Martha's Vineyard is add the F word before every verb or noun or gerund. So, "He'll bite your face off, those sharks. Sharks will bite your nose off. They'll bite your eyes off." Now, again, just add that one word you can't say.
Right.
And you've got exactly what the shark attack was really like on Martha's Vineyard. Right. And then it turns out it was a fraud. Speaking of frauds, it was made up. It was phony baloney. But it did add a lot of spice to a Thursday afternoon.
Yes, we've heard of the tiger shark and the hammerhead shark. This is the effing shark
there
of Martha's Vineyard.
There it is. He'll bite your face off over there. Don't get near that thing. Oh, no. He'll bite your face off.
See, I know you're smart enough. As long as you didn't hear the music, you knew not to worry.
There was no shark. I know sharks when I see them. There's no shark.
All right. Thank you, Bill Wolf, sports analyst, for the report on the shock of the new. Thank
My
you, Bill.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Allison.
You
bite your face off. And finally, let us return once more to William Elliott, summing up his battle with the devilfish. "We might now retire from the scene and hanging up our battered harpoons among the trophies of our humble rostral column, amuse our children with the histories of the enemy. I know not that I ever witnessed anything more picturesque than the appearance of the devilfish just before stranded." And we could say the same of the shack. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is it for this hour of the BPP. We've had shacks, we've had fish, we've had Filet-O-Fish, and we will continue on because this is our charge. We're always online at npr.org/BryantPack. Once you hear that Boston accent, you can't get it out of your head. You know what? Seafood, it sounds really good in the Boston accent. Scallops. Yep. I'm Mike Pesca. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.